Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
March 22nd, 2019, and thank you for joining me today. Some really important follow-ups today in regard to the Yellow Vests. One that we discussed actually this morning while I was a guest on the Fault Lines radio show about the French government now actually authorizing lethal force against protesters. And another about the French government outright banning Yellow Vest protests this weekend. And yet another story demonstrating the clear bias of the United States oligarchy and the Western media when it comes to the Israeli government, especially when it comes to addressing its many and varied crimes. In this case, a massive tax evasion scheme of specifically Americans with dual Israeli citizenship, which I find very interesting, being willfully omitted from their entire news coverage, and more on the recent arrest of Guaido's chief of staff and how it actually relates to his working with a U.S.-backed terrorist cell operation that was planning essentially to kill high-level Venezuelan officials, possibly even Maduro himself. Some big news. But first, to begin today, this article coming from strategicculture.org in regard to a red line being drawn from Russia about Venezuela. Now, this is something we've all seen coming. This is a big step and a public step made on the international stage to basically say now officially that the U.S. cannot take military action unless they want to cross the red line drawn by Russia, which is clearly what has ultimately stopped the United States from effectively taking over Syria. So clearly that's worked. So this is clearly another problem for the floundering illegal regime change effort being carried out by the United States, that Russia is putting its foot down and saying, no, you cannot do this. Which, it's interesting, as I've always pointed out, I don't trust any government, or any politician for that matter. But continually, Russia seems to be, maybe even just, you know, in a show of very, solid political savvy, they continually are placing themselves on the moral high ground in regard to what the U.S. is doing as foreign policy. Does that mean Russia always has the moral high ground? Of course not. I don't think so. But the reality is they're clearly outplaying the U.S. in their foreign policy and every step of the way putting themselves on the right side of history. That could also mean that they are just actually do have the moral high ground. But who can know that for sure? But the reality is the U.S. is continually looking worse and worse, and now Russia has clearly put their foot down. Now, at a high-level meeting in Rome, actually, this week, between U.S., special envoy on Venezuela and affairs, Elliot Abrams, convicted war criminal Elliot Abrams, and previously attempted to overthrow the Venezuelan government. Interesting how that works out. And, of course, Russia's deputy foreign minister, Sergei Ryabkov, Russia reiterated at this meeting a grave warning specifically to the United States. Moscow will not tolerate another military intervention to topple the Venezuelan government with whom it is allied. Obviously, Russia's allied with Venezuela, but in general, just simply saying that you cannot use military intervention on Venezuela. Now, Abrams, of course, being, no ordinary diplomat, as the article puts it, quote, he is a regime change specialist with a criminal record for sponsoring terrorist operations, which, by the way, is a verifiable fact, goes on to say specifically the infamous Iran-Contra affair, to which he was caught lying to Congress twice, went to prison for it. Bush pardoned him. Goes on to say to destabilize Nicaragua during the 1980s, which he also got caught for shipping weapons using humanitarian aid cover. Funny how all these things align with what's happening today. Goes on to say his appointment by President Trump to the Venezuelan file only underscores the serious intent in Washington for regime change in Caracas. Whether it gets away with that intent is another matter. Now, meanwhile, back in Washington, D.C., President Donald Trump was, of course, again, bragging or boasting about the fact that military option was still on the table for Venezuela. That's that they seem to say every single day, no matter what they're talking about. And this is in his press conference with the other authoritarian dictator, their Brazilian counterpart, Jair Bolsonaro. Of course, it's interesting when you look at a person like this extreme fascist authoritarian ruler, is guilty of all the things they pretend Venezuela is doing, by the way, and all the things they pretend any of their adversaries are doing, but they don't care because he's on their side. See, it's hypocrisy. It's right in front of you if you just care to look at it. Thank you, Tim, for supporting this channel, the super chat. I appreciate it. Now, after the Rome meeting, Ryabkov said bluntly, quote, we assume that Washington treats our priorities seriously, our approach, and our warnings. Now, one of these warnings delivered by Ryabkov is understood to have been specifically that no American military intervention in Venezuela will be tolerated by Moscow whatsoever. Now, but this is basically two nuclear powers standing toe-to-toe here. And it's the same thing that we saw happen in Syria. So I would argue that if Moscow takes a hard line here, as it seems they are, the U.S. is likely not going to take military intervention. This is a great thing to see. Now, Moscow has reiterated countless times that the legitimate president of Venezuela is Nicolas Maduro, whom the people voted for last year by an overwhelming majority in a free and fair election, albeit boycotted by the U.S. orchestrated opposition. And this is all very easy to verify. The only thing challenging this narrative is U.S. officials saying so. I challenge anyone to actually research the information and come back with anything other than the fact that we have people around the world screaming about how legitimate this election was and the U.S. saying, we disagree. We have stuff, but we're not going to show you. Seems how that happens every time, especially in regard to Syria. Now, this is the next story, the big story in my mind about Venezuela, showing you exactly why Venezuela, Maduro specifically, has been so resistant to anything involving the United States, in particular when it comes to aid. And that's because they're trying to find any possible way they can to sneak in some kind of operation, some kind of a terrorist cell, as this article calls it, coming from South Front. Venezuelan authorities arrest U.S.-linked terrorist cell amid new Washington push to overthrow Maduro. So this would actually now be the second operation that the Venezuelan government has stopped. Verifiably so, mind you, at least the first one. This is now coming from them again, saying we've caught a group here with the intention to assassinate Venezuelan officials. And you'll never guess who the connection here, who this connects to. And I just covered this story in regard to Guaido's chief of staff. Turns out they arrested him because he's connected to the terrorist cell operation, which shouldn't be very surprising, knowing that Guaido, as Gray Zone had uncovered in their investigation, that Guaido was trained by these regime change cultivators, these people that basically groom operatives for regime change. This is something classic in U.S. history. And they're from the most violent groups that operate on the fringe of Venezuelan society. This is all verified. So it's not surprising that they would be carrying out very violent operations. And this is damaging, I would say, for the U.S. They're likely going just to say, oh, it's all a lie. That's evil Maduro. He's making things up, except that they have evidence to support their claims. Now, on March 21st, as they call it, a terrorist cell was arrested by Venezuelan authorities. Minister of Interior, Justice, and Peace, Nestor Rivolo, ruining his name, announced, quote, according to the Venezuelan official, the terrorist cell, quote, would have hired Colombian and Central American mercenaries to attack the lives of political leaders, military men, magistrates of the Supreme Court Justice, it's reversed because of the language barrier, and to carry out acts of sabotage to public services to create chaos in the Bolivarian society, end quote. Now understand, this is talking about an operation to specifically target and attack anybody that did not bow to U.S. interests. Even the military personnel that have not tucked tail and run across the border to be left and disregarded, as we'll get to more in a moment, on the border of Colombia, all the people that supposedly defected or just left there to flounder now, the U.S. or Guaido have just left them there. But these are the people they're targeting. Political leaders, people such as Maduro, and just average military personnel on their side. Now, the U.S. proclaimed interim President Juan Guaido's chief of staff, Robert Marrero, was arrested as a part of this specific operation, as we recently covered as it was breaking. But it turns out now they think the Venezuelan government thinks specifically he was involved with this terrorist cell to carry out violent acts, which is a totally legitimate reason to arrest somebody. It says, quote, the citizen Marrero Borgas, his chief of staff, is directly responsible for the organization of these criminal groups, as in the organization of carrying out terrorist acts in Venezuela at the behest of the U.S. government. It says a batch of weapons, interesting, the second time we've seen this, of a batch of weapons of war, they called it, cash in foreign currency, mind you, was seized from him during a search conducted in his residence. Interesting that he would have a mass amount of foreign currency. Seems like that's something that you wouldn't need unless he was being paid by a foreign government. Interesting how that works. But see, these are the facts that they'll just ignore and just claim it's all a big lie despite all their evidence to the contrary. Now, a tweet was put out by Nicolas Maduro announcing this. yesterday saying Nicolas Maduro, and this is the first part, announces the arrest of a terrorist cell that sought to bring Colombian mercenaries into Venezuela. One of those arrested is an advisor to oppositionist Juan Guaido. And it says, according to Nicolas Maduro, quote, the terrorist group that has been arrested has as their objective to attack military bases, hospitals, and metro stations. Now, of course, this is coming from Maduro. You could argue that he could have just added that and made it up. Who ultimately knows? But based on the U.S.'s history in previous governments, including or in previous countries, including this country, in the very recent history, and including the people that are currently working with them, such as Elliot Abrams, are guilty of exactly these kind of acts in the history. So it's very likely this is completely true. And again, what we've seen so far by the U.S. government and their inability to actually bring evidence to bear on any claims they make should immediately make you question their disavowal of such a thing. Now, this was also repeated by Venezuelan President Maduro in multiple addresses. Now, Guaido gave a speech on the arrest as well, of course, having to stand up and give his two cents, saying that whoever gave the order to, quote, kidnap Marrero made, quote, another big mistake, and that there would be repercussions. He also claimed that the arrest showed Maduro's weakness, which is all just ridiculous. It's actually not the case. I mean, he's clearly shown a lot of restraint in not outright arresting Guaido as he's currently trying to overthrow the government. Again, the ridiculous point of claiming Maduro's a dictator while he's allowing massive anti-Maduro protests to take place all over the country, while he's allowing this maniac to run around and scream about overthrowing the government in a violent fashion, as he's allowing the newspapers to continue to print basically regurgitated U.S. talking points. What an evil dictator, right? These are things that are not synonymous with a dictator. They just don't want you to think about these things. But it shows his restraint to not lock him up, not his weakness. And now that he's locking these other people up, I think it's actually a very savvy political move because it puts the U.S. in a bad position. They were hoping that he was going to arrest Guaido, and they clearly weren't kidnapped. And these people are breaking the law in countless different ways. Now, of course, all of this while Guaido continues to call for the people, as he's pretending that he's not the violent one, as he literally on record calls for people to rise up and organize riots against the government. But neither the mainstream media nor any other reports claim there are any active revolts or riots, despite the attempts at agitation and propaganda on a regular basis, and very clear examples of it. Now, except that, you know, when they do, they get hung out to dry and disregarded by U.S.-backed opposition. And this is in regard to the people that defect. Now, here's the interesting point. This is very important to understand. Now, these people, and I've showed this before. These people on the other side of this fence are the people that defected and left the Venezuelan army and went over to Colombia and with promises of saving them and giving them riches and amnesty. This is all the things that they promised. Now, you can see the tweet. It says, Venezuelan military officers who deserted on February 23rd and fled to Colombia denounce being, quote, adrift and waiting for President Guaido. They claim that Ankar requires them to vacate the camp and move on their own. So now they're being forced to leave and they have nowhere to go. These are the people that revolt and that try to leave. And when they do, they just get left out to dry. Now, as I recently reported, Venezuelan army deserters were abandoned by the United States and its Guaido puppet and the Colombian government. All of these people have completely left these people out to dry, and they still want people to think that somehow everyone's defecting over to the U.S. side. The people that are being left out. They're being left with nothing. This is what they think of the people. See, this is the point. It's all a political game. It's all a political theater show. They wanted people to run across the border so they can say, see, look, we're winning, in hopes that it would all be over. But see, they had no plan in place to actually do something for these people when they did. The same reason that Elliot Abrams floundered on during the briefing about being able to explain how Guaido is somehow in power. He's got no power. He's got no support. He's got no location. How is this man actually the president? He's not, is the point. They are failing in this effort, and they're leaving people out to dry that actually step over to help them because, you see, this is the funny thing. These are people, you know, being offered money and amnesty. So they're probably not good people, right? We'll forget all of your criminal acts and we'll pay you for it. These aren't the usual people that run across and say, I'm fighting for freedom. They're saying, I'm fighting to get my criminal acts dismissed and money that's coming from the U.S. government. It's just funny. These aren't the best people you'd want. Now, they were promised by Guaido and the U.S. that they would receive support if they abandoned the Maduro government. Yet, of course, when they did, they got discarded like the props that they were used as. They asked Venezuelan lawmaker Juan Guaido, behind from this fence, as you can see, who had unconstitutionally self-proclaimed himself interim president of Venezuela, to help them. Again, the quote, "We are adrift. We do not have the support of anybody. We want Juan Guaido to come to talk to us face to face," they said. Interesting. I wonder why the mainstream media wouldn't tell you about this. Goes on to say, "Most of us do not have relatives in Colombia. We were the breadwinners of our families in Venezuela, and now we're here with nothing." Sure shows you how it benefits you to run along with the U.S. agenda. Classic. I mean, our history is rife with examples of the U.S. charging up a rebel group and then leaving them out to dry. People would say the same thing about the Kurds right now. They say all plenty of things. I don't necessarily agree with that, but countless examples throughout history of them saying, "Yeah, freedom, democracy, we'll back you up. Overthrow the government, fight these people, carry out violent acts, and we got your back." And then they do, and they get murdered and destroyed. Rife with examples of this. Now, I just spoke yesterday of the actions being taken in France that are being ignored, as they point to other countries being much worse. Of course, against the Yellow Vests and their right to peacefully protest. Now, before we get into the next story about the Yellow Vest, I recently touched on two different stories. One being that France is going to be banning protests of course, only the ultra-radicals, but that's left up to them to decide, and we don't get to know, which basically means they're going to ban people everywhere, which today's story makes the clear case for, and of course also that they're going to be deploying military, pulling them from counter-terrorist operations and putting them on the streets against, you know, peaceful protesters, because that makes sense. But for the big story today, one that I was discussing on this morning with on Fault Lines Radio and was actually shared with me online by its host, Garland Nixon. Thank you for sharing this, because this is a big story. We are now seeing these statements brought to fruition. French soldiers will be allowed to, quote, open fire if lives are threatened, of course, by Yellow Vest rioters. Right. Despite the fact that they were clearly trying to make the distinction between the Black Bloc and the Yellow Vests, they just lump them all together in the idea that we're talking about Yellow Vest rioters, not the rioters that were at the Yellow Vest protest, but that they're all Yellow Vest rioters. See, this is the propaganda, using their agent provocateurs to create the justification to be able to say, "Oh, well, the moment we see violence, people's lives are in danger. Now we're allowed to literally open fire from our military rifles and kill peaceful protesters that just happened to be there." How is this where it has gotten to? How is this not being addressed by the rest of the world? It's because of the Western media and their clampdown on even talking about how serious this is. Essentially, as the article from, you can find this Daily Mail and wherever else, which the article links to, French soldiers will basically be allowed to open fire with live ammunition, per the French government. Quote, "If lives are threatened by Yellow Vest rioters," they say, this weekend, as the military is now being called in to help, it's already 5,000 police already on the streets of Paris. Because these police officers with their guns apparently are not enough. Now they need military personnel with bigger guns. Think about the logic there. How does that even make sense? This is a statement. This is a statement saying we're going to bring in military martial law, which is what this is, to stop something that we are afraid of. Because it's powerful and it's changing people's minds and it's waking them up to the reality of the globalist bank run nature of our society, more than just France. And so now, alarmingly enough, which is why I'm talking about today, I am worried that tomorrow morning we are going to see more deaths than we've ever seen in regard to France. And guess what? The media will still not talk about it. And of course, second, in this still ongoing story, as we're seeing these come to fruition, we just talked about them being banned. Well, guess what? Now, it's not that they're saying, well, we might ban some of the radical ones, even though they're ridiculous statements trying to make it seem like it was okay for demonstrators, but not the radicals. Now they just came out before it even started and said, guess what? We're going to ban Yellow Vest protests in these areas. As the article reads, Saturday's planned Yellow Vest protest on Champs-Élysées banned by police. I did look that one up. I got it right. But this is serious, right? We went from saying that, okay, the demonstrations are okay, but only the radical ones we're going to ban, to before it has even started, for them to be able to pick out the radical ones per their own statement, they've already said they're banned. Showing you the lie in their own statements. The rallies were prohibited in addition to this area, in numerous other cities as well around France, showing us again just how hollow, as I talked about in the previous show, Benjamin Grivier, I believe his name is, his words, how hollow they truly were. He's a French official. And remember, we discussed this yesterday, and he said, quote, "These are not demonstrators, but rioters." Of course, the distinction is very different because demonstrations are protected by law, he says. Rioting is not. So clearly, as these were shut down, as you can see by the article, before they even began, before any so-called radical elements could even be targeted, it shows us that this is about shutting down the yellow vests and not these supposed radical elements, which are easily attributable, of course, to their Asian provocateurs to begin with. This action is quite literally shutting down what he claims are demonstrations protected by law. I mean, again, just recognize the absurdity of what he's saying. And then saying that we're only finding the bad ones, but we're going to shut this down before it even begins. This is the absurd nature of everything we're talking about, the Western powers right now, of saying we're fighting for democracy and humanitarianism and your rights, but we're going to take away your rights and kill people and invade countries. But see, it's okay because we said we're doing good things. So as long as you ignore the actions all around us and just listen to what we want you to hear, then it's all okay. This is what we're doing. They are shutting down legal protest and knowingly doing so under a guise that we're just supposed to ignore, that they shut it down before it even started. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And it's something we need. This, again, this goes back to everything we're talking about. It's not just France. You can extrapolate everything we're seeing here in all of the countries we're talking about today and all of their foreign policy and the media's willingness to completely ignore anything that shows their contradictions, that shows their hypocrisy, and really highlights anything negative about any U.S. ally. That should be alarming to us and should show us, as always, that these people are not here to fight for your rights and the media is not here to inform you. It's pretty damn simple. Just got to wake up to see it. And to make this example even more obvious, for the last story of the day, it's actually an interesting story for me because I don't agree with paying taxes. I don't think, at least at the very least, I don't think we should be that we shouldn't have to pay them if we don't want to participate in a system or a society, except the fact that we do. We're forced to, which is a small example of how we're not as free as we think we are, being forced to pay taxes at a barrel of a gun. But this story's interesting, and you'll see why. Coming from Mint Press News, media blackout as Israel's largest banks pay over $1 billion in fines for U.S. tax evasion schemes. So you can see my point. To point out that they're breaking this law, even though I would argue that we all should be, is interesting. But it's not just because they're breaking the law. It's because it happened, and they're being held accountable for it, being charged with a crime, and still the media is utterly ignoring it because we're talking about Israel. We've seen so many other tax evasion schemes, the Panama Paper, we've seen all these things, and the media is all over it, drooling over examples that they can, of course, use for their two-party narratives. But see, this is about Israel, so they just utterly ignore it. And it is a huge story, a massive multi-bank operation of defrauding American taxpayers. It's a big story, but they won't talk about it. So it's the examples are overflowing today. Now, Israel's three largest banks, actually, and I'm sure we can all assume that has no connection to the government. Of course not. Just like our banks here have no connection to the U.S. government. But the three largest banks in Israel have all been ordered to pay record fines, which collectively are set to total over $1 billion to the United States government after the banks were found to have actively, willfully colluded with thousands of wealthy Americans, dual Israeli citizen Americans, in massive tax evasion schemes. Now, understand, we're talking about the dual Israeli American citizens, a lot of them being at, you know, the upper echelon of our ruling class society. I'm sure that's just coincidence. Now, the scandal, though it has been reported on the Israeli media, interestingly enough, has garnered basically zero attention by the United States media, or the Western media, for that matter. The media blackout has been actually so surprising, as it reads, it was even directly mentioned by the Times of Israel. See, even the Times of Israel saying, holy crap, the United States is ignoring this massive story, which is pretty big. Now, it says, given the similar revelations about other banks and offshore tax evasion schemes, which is what I was pointing out, such as those contained within the Panama Papers, which led to global protests and even the resignations of world leaders and, of course, massive media coverage. Now, the settlements, are the end result, the payment of $1 billion, of a series of Department of Justice probes that were related to the DOJ's 2007 investigation targeting UBS AG, Switzerland's largest bank. The focus of the probe turned to Israel after a few years later in 2011, when it was determined that the Swiss subsidiaries of several of Israel's largest banks had actively, intentionally aided Americans seeking to launder their money. Tax evasion, money laundering, criminals. Now, the DOJ found that the three banks, Israel's largest when ranked by net income and total assets, had a history of collaborating with wealthy Americans in tax evasion schemes, not just in their Swiss subsidiaries, but in Israel as well. Most of those wealthy Americans were Jewish Americans or dual U.S.-Israeli citizens who, of course, hid their U.S. citizenship from the Israeli banks. Now, the U.S. State Department notably listed Israel as a, quote, major money laundering country, whose financial institutions engage in currency transactions involving significant amounts of proceeds from international narcotics trafficking or other serious crime. That's directly from the U.S. State Department. Funny how they're pointing to Venezuela without any discernible evidence, and it's actually a lack of, because it doesn't exist, of them being involved in massive narcotics trade, even though Colombia, the group they're currently operating from out of their country, has the largest narcotics trade functioning in South America. But it's okay because they're a U.S. ally. And Israel's literally being caught for laundering money and tax evasion and proceeds from international narcotics trafficking. And guess what? The media just says, yeah, not important. We don't need to cover this. That's not a big deal. But of course it would be if it had been Maduro, if it had been the three largest banks in Venezuela. Of course it would have been. How many times do we need to point out the absurd double standard of the mainstream media? And of course, again, the original point I made, I'm not saying personally from a fundamental standpoint that it's wrong for people to evade taxes. I'm not advocating for people to do it because you'll go to jail. And I don't want anybody to get in trouble. But I understand the idea of not wanting to pay taxes by the barrel of a gun. But what we're talking about here, it's not just about tax evasion. It is about Israeli government and their corporate society as well being criminals. Not just money laundering, not just tax evasion, money laundering, international narcotics trafficking, as well as everything else we talk about on a regular basis, killing people in Palestine with impunity. The reality is all of these things go completely untouched by the media, even though they'd be touched by other people if they were committed the same. That is the big story for me. And it's something we have to continue to see. The double standard of our oligarchy and the media that they control. They will not allow us to talk about this stuff. We have to continue to see that. Now, of course, this is nothing new. The mainstream media knows by now that they are supposed to ignore any bad coverage of Israel's government and its many crimes. That's just a given, especially when it highlights the hypocrisy of the U.S. and its allies. This is why, for instance, that Palestinian children will get much longer sentences in prison, mind you, for throwing stones at Israeli soldiers, while Israeli soldiers will get basically nothing for killing Palestinian children. Interesting how that works, how one side gets the fullest extent of the law, while the other side gets completely nothing for murder. This is not about justice. This is about control and power. As the classic, usually misattributed, yet all too accurate quote goes, to know who rules over you, look at who you're not allowed to criticize. Thank you so much for tuning in today. As always, I appreciate your support. I appreciate all the super chats. If you'd like to support this channel, all the links are in the show notes for our PayPal, our Bitbacker for cryptocurrency, our Patreon, or if you'd like to buy a Question Everything shirt, go to our truthclothing.io link in the show notes. And if you want to buy anything else from that page, make sure you put in the Vagabond code. And all of it goes to help our channel continue to spread the truth, which is what I do on a daily basis to the best of my knowledge. As always, I could be mistaken, and that's why I ask you to do your own research. Question everything, as it says, including what I say. Do your research. Think for yourself. Do your due diligence. It's never been more important than today. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.